May 11th, 2021. It's the Watch for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Pedro Show. Happy Tuesday. Started off the show with John Coltrane doing Out of This World. And then Victoria Shen with The Hanging of Pangloss. Well, you heard a voice, people. Yeah, Brother Matt is still at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point because we're still in quite quarantino mode. But I am not totally man alone because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got Victoria Shen with me.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome aboard, Victoria.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Please bring your earliest musical recollection. I want to learn about your journey through music.
Oh, yeah? Okay. So the first CDs I've probably ever owned, because I'm of the CD era, was probably, ABBA, Aqua, and Britney Spears, so early in the alphabet. But then there was this distinct transition when I was in fifth grade. I was part of a play. The play was for The Giver. I don't know if you've ever read that book. But during intermission, my first boyfriend, I was listening to Korn, K-O-R-N, and so we were listening together, and my mind was being blown by this, and I was obsessed, and I actually, I still feel bad about it to this day, but I had my aunt buy me a Korn CD because she can't read English so well, and my mom would never buy a CD with a parental advisory on it, so... I tricked her into buying this this CD for me. But yeah, it just kind of led me down this path of listening to harder, more like alternative music, which then kind of went into from CDs to like internet radio, and then from internet radio to like peer-to-peer file sharing. So yeah, once I was bitten, I just like in fifth grade, I was just constantly consuming music from then on.
Can I ask you about before, like, really, you know, before you knew names of bands or anything, like when you were a girl, like the pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
No, definitely not, actually. It was pretty bereft of musical instruments, but my mom listened to a ton of Chinese opera. So actually, yeah, some of my earliest memories were sitting in a laundromat listening to Chinese opera with my mom. But that actually was on... a tape deck, a little Walkman with her, and like splitting an earbud.
Okay, so your mom was a fan of Chinese opera.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but...
Have you heard it before? It's like really, I think it's all played by men, but they imitate women, and so they have these really high pitches, you know, really high register singing like, you know, I don't know if you've heard it. It's pretty unique.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, even Shakespeare had men playing women.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's a tradition of this. But the cover of Captain Beefheart's Dock at the Radar Station is him, his painting of him being at the Peking Opera or some stuff like that. So,
oh, huh.
I mean, that's a painting. That ain't a sound, but... I what was that, the Cultural Revolution, what, the Red Lantern? I saw some of that, and that was, they were jumping around in soldier uniforms singing like the way you did.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But I know the tradition is like hundreds of, you know, goes way back and stuff. But, so you they were listeners. They, your mom actually didn't play?
Yeah, my mom doesn't play any instruments.
Okay, okay. Well, I was wondering, you know, because everybody comes from different places musically.
Oh, well, I got to tell you. So my mom is Cambodian, and she immigrated here during the Khmer Rouge. So, you know, they didn't have anything aside from, like, the clothes on their back. But back in Cambodia, her dad was in one of these, like, Cambodian rock bands, which I don't know if you've listened to, like, you know, different compilation, you know, records with – like called Cambodia Rocks, but it was this kind of like garage movement in Cambodia in the 60s. And like, I guess my grandpa was in one of those bands.
That's great. I heard Vietnam ones. It's kind of instrumental. It's kind of surf,
but
their own take on it. You know, it's like they took our stuff and then made it their own.
Oh yeah, for sure. Tons of covers.
Yeah. Something in the Sky, I remember.
Yeah,
that was there was a famous one. But, you know, I was a boy in the 60s, so my memory's terrible anyway. So what about in school, Victoria? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
In middle school, I played percussion because I always wanted to play drums. But, you know, I lived in a tiny little apartment in San Francisco. Actually, it was in, like, an in-laws. I was like, yeah, so we didn't have room for drums. We didn't have, like, the environment that wouldn't be conducive to playing loud music. So
were you in the Avs on the west side?
I was in the Richmond district. My family lives in the Avenues now, but yeah, same story. Still like pretty small, like very close knit housing. You know, there's no spaces between each individual unit. But I played percussion anyway. But I just didn't do drums. I just did like things like xylophone and yeah, I didn't get to really play a kit.
Were you in the marching band? Maybe a glockenspiel.
Yeah, I played glockenspiel, but I didn't do marching band. No, it was just normal band. Yeah.
Normal. I hate that word.
Normie band. Square band.
Yeah, square John. So okay. First record you bought for yourself, or you know whatever the medium, album, CD.
Yeah. Okay. Honestly, it probably was The Vines. Oh, I think it's self-titled.
Okay, because when you know you ain't got a lot of money when you're a kid, so that's why I'm curious. And what about the first gig you went and saw?
Oh my gosh. Okay, this is more on the Square lines. I won tickets from a radio station that I used to listen to, Live 105, which is like the alternative radio station in the Bay Area. And I got tickets to see Radiohead when I was 12. So I went and saw Radiohead when I was 12, and it was pretty amazing.
Okay, yeah. And you got to pick it, because a lot of people, their first gig, like, they get taken to, right?
Yeah, this was really nice. I was like, fuck, Radiohead, I got to call it now.
So you're doing percussion and stuff, at music-wise. And yeah. Not after school, like graduate, but in the afternoon, did you get into the bedroom band, the garage band, the, you know, basement band trip with some friends?
No, all I did was, honestly, it was really solitary. I did learn how to play guitar, and I was listening to a lot of Hendrix when I was younger. And so my goal was to, like, be able to play alongside Hendrix. And so I was doing tons of tabs and then also learning, like, blues scales and stuff. And it was an electric guitar, but I would, like, listen as I played with, like, on headphones. So that was kind of my trip. So music was mostly like a solitary experience. I never did bands. First band I got into was when I was 25. So
that's all right. Joe Baeza and Saccharine Tresh didn't start playing guitar till he's 27. Vincent painted his last 10 years of his life. Some people aren't child prodigies, and I think it's okay.
Oh yeah, definitely not a prodigy.
Orson Welles said, "No wine before it's time."
Well, actually, I do feel like I'm blessed in that way, so I can, like, kind of explore, like, music and playing on my own terms, you know, and not have it be so guided.
Yeah, like a Disney mom or dad trying to fucking, milk you.
Oh, I'm so lucky I don't have a tiger mom, despite having an Asian mom.
Well, for example, the Disney model kind of got adopted by this K-pop thing, right, with the dormitories and getting kids, like, when they're 6 or 7.
Oh, yeah, K-pop kennels.
Yeah, K-pop kennels. So, and I don't know if that's just an Asian thing. Like I said, I think it was actually the Disney model. Mouseketeers and shit from Funicello days.
Yeah, right, the Mickey Mouse Club. Right, yeah. Justin Timberlake, Britney Spears, yeah.
But even before, like, 60s and shit, when I was a boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it goes way back with the plastic fucking ears and all that shit.
What about, what was that band that did 96 Tears? Weren't they kids, too,
they called them, question mark, you know, the Ashton Brothers
and
knew
the Mysterions, right? Yeah.
No, they were called question mark and the Mystery, and the question, he changed his name, the singer.
Oh, yeah.
The Mysterions. And, they called themselves Mexican, Michigan Mexicans, because they were families of migrant pickers, you know, cherry pickers and shit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this, the Bastion Brothers and Stooges hit me to these guys. And I think they were teenagers, and the band broke up because there was a draft, right?
Right.
The Vietnam War, and so some guys had to go to be in the Army. That happened to Billy Gibbons' band, too, the Moving Sidewalks, and why I put together ZZ Top. You know, that was, yeah, like now we have the COVID-19 disrupting. Well, in those days, they had the draft. See, I was finally the youngest guy in this when I was helping the Stooges out, and I got to learn about this whole thing in the 60s. But, you know, it's all relative to our own lives, so everything's always the worst, the most drama. But I could imagine having to act like you were crazy or homosexual or something like this so they wouldn't take you into the war. Or so. But I want to play this Deafening.
Thank you. small dark, heavily streaked finch. But it's small dark, heavily streaked finch with a deeply notched bill and sharply pointed bill. The pines then they have an evident touch of yellow in the wings and at the base of the tail. They are commonly found foraging with the conic red.
For its stillness. Its bare branches stand silent in the woodland and mist dampens the birdsong. The sun leans closer to the ground and whispers light onto the surface of the reservoir. Frost holds the axis, squeezing it still, as though it has turned enough for one year. We walk the veins of the moor, the determined to find the source of the one thing which still flows. I am unaware that these streams, this sponge, is the start of Derbyshire's longest river, that as I climb, I am scaling an origin story. I expect the stop sign, the words, the end in the form of a pile of rocks, maybe a waterfall. Instead, I plunge waist deep into peat bog. We laugh as you pull me out, and I, cold and shaking, am unaware that I have time travelled throughout thousands of years. We turn back and drop down to the river. My body feels heavy as my feet squelch against my boots. I realise I have misjudged this landscape, this winter. Even stillness has a pulse. I am beginning to understand that chiselling my figure into statues will bring me no peace, that my body is also a river, will continue to run despite the dam of my arms. Even when I sit, eyes closed, legs crossed, I can hear my heartbeat, the in and out of my breath. No matter how hard I try, I cannot hold back the water.
Oh!
Black for Pedro show. That was Victoria Shen with Deafening. SLWCC, Watt after that, brand new album. Something Found is the tune. Balmas Printing after that, Coming Ashore, D.C. area. Sophie, Sfarham, and Christopher Gregory, a Derby part of England, with Searching for the Source of the Derwent. Street Eaters after that, Waxwing. Yeah, what was that? Triclops, I think, the singer, man. He was in a lot of bands. A big, long mic cord guy. I can't remember his name now. And then Eviction. It's a kind of a pun name with your...
Oh, yeah. Eviction. That's right.
That's it. Little pun rock, right? Little pun rock. With Current Affair. There's some pun there also. That's mm-hmm. right. So I'm curious about the guitar thing. How did you get... Did you go and buy it, or was it given to you?
Oh, it was a Christmas gift. It was a kind of concession because I couldn't get a drum kit, that I got an electric guitar instead. So it was my first Strat or whatever kind of kit.
Like, I want something musical. If I can't have the drums, get me a guitar and earphones, headphones.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah. Okay. And then, like you were saying, Woman Alone, you autodidact taught yourself listening to Jimmy and shit. Which ain't a bad thing to do, I think. He's probably one of the best cats you can learn from. Incredible. Even if you're a bass person, man, if you can play to Jimmy. You know, and he played bass on some of his records, too. So, but you never went and joined a band. You said 25 years old was when you first joined a band. And what was that band?
That band is called Trim, and it was just like a buddy and I have been, you know, seeing each other at, like, Halloween parties, like, always talking about, like, starting a band, and then, like, I had this, like, kind of, like, life-changing encounter back in San Francisco. I was living in Boston for 13 years, and so I would come back during the holidays, and then I was, like, really inspired by this person I met, and I was like, shit, I should start a band, and so... I played with Dana, who drummed at the time. Actually, Dana's really talented, is a total multi-instrumentalist. And I had been making synthesizers for a while, like different analog synthesizers, because in college I got a gig soldering for this company called Flower Electronics, which is all analog modular synthesizers. So it's like I learned how to build the instrument, and then I learned how to play it, and I started playing it and then started making music with it. And so I would take, like, microphones and then, like, mic my Dana's drum kit and then, like, take that input and then put it into the modular synthesizer. So we kind of became, like, a singular organism where, like, my synths would, like, be blaring through the speakers, and the speakers would get picked up by the drums, and there would be this kind of, like, feedback element. And whenever Dana would strike – a drum, then it would also, you know, of course, feed the synth too. So it was kind of like push-pull constantly. It was pure improvisation. I've only ever worked with improvisation. No songs have ever been written, really.
And by this time, you let go of the guitar?
No, actually, I had the guitar too at the very beginning, but then it just became like too much shit to carry. So yeah, I quickly let go of the guitar.
Okay, because... You never know, right? I'm just hearing sounds out of the speaker, and I don't know, you know, pay no attention to that person behind the curtain thing, you know.
So
it might be guitar, it might be, you know, Alabama sausage whistle. Right?
Yeah, total Alabama sausage.
Okay.
But, actually, during the pandemic, I was like, maybe I should, like, revisit my roots a little bit. So, I started experimenting with guitar and, like, putting magnets on the pickups and stuff. And then, like, I do a lot of, I don't know if you've seen, but, like, electronics experiments. So, yeah, I've been, like, using, like, Ebow and, like, trying to, like, make my own Ebow and do, like, weird, like, magnetic, like, EMF frequency kind of, like, experiments. And then, you know, the guitar, the electric guitar is just another kind of instantiation of, like, inductors, coils, mics, pickups. So I'm just, like, kind of playing with it on that kind of level. But I think the results have been sort of interesting. But I haven't released anything with this kind of, like, explorative guitar stuff yet.
Yeah, it's got strings, too. That's a big difference. Did Trim ever do gigs?
Oh, yeah, we did tons.
Well, tell me about the first Trim gig.
Oh, gosh. Okay, the first trim gig. Wow. Yeah.
Because is that your first gig, period?
I think so. Actually, my real first gig was kind of like a gig for the International Noise Conference with, you know, Rat Bastard from Miami.
He was on the show a couple months ago. Great cast.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
I love Rat.
Yeah, Florida guy.
Yeah, so nice, so generous. He threw together something at MIT because they took INC on the road. And so I was there, and then I was like, well, I might as well play. So I played synthesizer for like 5 minutes. But so that was like the first real gig, but that wasn't really, I don't know, didn't seem very official. It was kind of like off the cuff. But this gig, I played in the basement of White House, which is this kind of like historical bastion of like experimental music in Boston. It's just like a house in Jamaica Plain. I don't know if you're familiar with like the geography there, but it's kind of like the southern part of Boston. And in this basement of this sort of like, I don't know. There's just been so many bands that have been through that house. So we played there. I was kind of like a gig where like someone was playing a cassette, that player that was like taped to their hip, and then someone else was playing like playing back an MP3 and then like kind of singing over the MP3. And then like Dana and I had like the formal band setting, I guess, with like guitar, synthesizer, drums. And we played, and it actually, I think it was really good if I remember it accurately. And then the people there were like, wow, and literally someone said history in the making. So that was kind of a nice little like, this is an auspicious start to making music.
That's trippy. When I've heard White House, there was an England band, kind of a Throb and Gristle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But no connection, just coincidence.
I mean, maybe they named White House after that band.
Because there was a lady over there that was uptight about shit, right? And I think that was her family name. And so to mock her, they called their band that.
Oh, is that the origin of it? That's great.
Yeah, like she would, this stuff is anti-whatever, not healthy. And, oh, yeah? We're going to name our band after you then. Something like that.
Oh, good move, yeah.
Mary Whitehouse, I think that's what her name was. Don't trust me on that because my memory's terrible, but that when you said that name. Now when Rat Bastard brought that noise thing to your school, you weren't at the school to make music.
No, I went to art school for visual arts. I was doing like printmaking, and then I started doing like sound and video art.
So music was a parallel universe.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I really liked music primarily, like from middle school on, but I think, I was never formally trained, right? And I did a lot of visual arts just like by myself, so that's kind of, it was like the path of least resistance that was still really interesting to me then. I've kind of since like fallen out of love with visual arts. Not with like just visual arts in general, but kind of, the visual arts world, like, you know, having to, like, navigate different, like, institutions, like, be it, like, a museum.
Galleries.
Like, yeah, totally. And I
know
feel like
from Pettibone that there's a lot of horse shit involved with that. I can understand it being a turn off to you. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, May 11, 2021 edition, Watt for Pedro Show. Special guest, Victoria Shen. Hold tight for hour two. May 11, 2021. It's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Far From Pedro, starting off the second hour, a little delayed game there because of pilot error. Can't blame the machinery people. What? Competent. Second hour, start off with Eviction, with this pun proj. Miss Victoria. Excerpt one from Clay Doll. Off air, people were discussing Mr. Clay and his art. Ben Salter from Tasmania after that, calling Ambience. There's some pun there, too. There's a lot of pun, right? Okay, Justice Yeldon, his brother Lucas and Sydney, with Julius and Ethel. Well, you can imagine who that is. And then Eviction with excerpt two from Clay Doll. So I guess Clay Doll was one big piece, and you gave me two parts of it.
That's it, yeah. First album, no individual tracks.
Is Trim still an ongoing concern, or did it have a
line? No, it sort of, it petered out because we went long distance. I was in Boston, the drummer moved to New York, and then, you know, we played shows here and there, but it was kind of difficult. And then I started doing my solo thing and traveling more, so it just sort of drifted.
So the Eviction thing is kind of a solo manifestation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally.
Okay, okay. And you're traveling woman alone, and then it being electronic, kind of portable.
Oh, totally. Everything is battery-powered, so I don't even have to worry about transformers or anything like that when I go internationally.
Right. Now, do you use pewters?
No pewters.
Okay.
Yeah, mostly now, just analog gear.
I was going to ask about, you know, because you're saying you're doing gigs, and what's your opinion on, crap top performances where the dude hits a space bar?
Well, listen, if you're doing it, you better do it really well. It better sound really good.
Okay.
You know, and you know how some people have a voice for radio? You know, it's kind of like the same thing. It's just
an aptitude.
Yeah, an aptitude. And, yeah, there's some incredible crap top sets, and then there's also total crap tops, snooze sets as well, snooze fests. But, yeah, it all kind of depends. I think, you know, it's just you can play good guitar, you can play bad guitar, you can play good laptop, you can play bad laptop. But as long as you bring something to the table, that's
well,
great.
Yeah, the idea of the performance, right? I mean, this can go – some of these – I guess we can call them aesthetics. Go back to vaudeville, the idea of work in a room.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right? Because I think, oh, no, this is my laboratory, and you guys can witness me experiment. Or is it like, what kind of dynamic do you call a gig in this kind of experimental stuff?
It's
yeah, of course.
Well, for myself, it's totally improvisational. So, you know, the same applies for a laptop. I think it's like, if you have flexibility to change your sound at will, then that's great. So you can respond to the room. And my thing is all about responding. So some people might say site-specific, but it's kind of, you know, become this, like, sort of overworked, stodgy term. But I do try to address, like, the unique features of the room, like the kind of audience that it is. And I also, like, you know, invade people's personal space a lot. You know, so part of the thing that I do is mobile because it is all battery powered. I do a lot of like wireless stuff too. So, yeah, like I get off the stage if there's a stage, or like I'll change kind of the dynamic of like the performer audience, kind of placement, position in space. Yeah, so everything is kind of like off the cuff in that way. And I think it's can be really effective. It's riskier, right? Because you don't have like a set. Or a song list or whatever, but I think it could be more rewarding, but it can also like totally tank. It can totally bomb in certain contexts. But I feel like the ratio of like bombing to having a really rewarding set has gotten better over the years.
Have you ever had confrontations?
Yeah, I have. I totally have. I in Japan, I like wrestled with a guy on the floor and got him down like MMA style, like playing the synth and stuff like that. And I think he also tried to like cop a feel or whatever, but it was like not having, it was, yeah, it's kind of weird.
So,
it's interesting because in Japan, like, I feel like I can take greater risks there because of the fact that people are so
polite.
Polite, you know, it's kind of mean to say, but, you know, I feel like I can be more confrontational, right?
Because you know what? Some of that might be just front, and underneath is a simmering kind of other thing.
Oh, my God, totally. Totally. I think that's why there's so, you know, noise music had a huge foothold there. Or, you know, I don't know, people debate whether it originates from Japan or not, but it really captivated a certain part of its population. And there was a lot of, like, transgressive, angry, fucked up, you know, music that was happening there. I think it's because of this repressive society and stuff that boils up from beneath a repressive kind of culture.
Yeah. Are you aware of this cat, Kaoru Abe?
Kaoru? I don't know Kaoru Abe.
Okay, he was the 70s. His cousin was actually that guy who sang Sukiyaki, which is the most retarded name, right? But he was a free jazz saxophonist. He moved on to, like, harmonica and stuff, but he OD'd in the late 70s.
Uh-huh.
And his wife, just the English translation of her first fiction just came out this month. But there was a free, you know, obviously influenced by John Coltrane and stuff, you know, the Sheets of Sound stuff. But I could see the point you're making there. The relating because of different pressures in society. I want to play some more Eviction here. Under the Stall Door.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
from Pedro Show. That chunk of music, Eviction with Under the Stall Door. Then we have Bucolic Spectre out of Northern Ireland with Three Stars Align. And then Victoria Shen with T. Mikawa. It should be renamed. What's this collab?
Yeah, do you know Toshiji Mikawa? He's in the Incapacitants, which is one of, the most legendary Japanese bands. It's him and Fumio, and they put on a fucking great show, and we played a gig together in Tokyo in 2019, and so that's kind of, the core of this collab, and then we just kind of did a remote collab, kind of, bookending that live set. But, yeah, he's such a incredible person. He's, I think a banker or something for his day gig, and then, his nightlife has to do with making the most insane, harsh, abrasive sounds.
The guy who goes way back is Marisbau, right?
Oh, yeah. Wait, sorry? The Japanese goes way back? Yeah,
definitely. And Keiji Hano. Mm-hmm, there was a movie made about Carol Abu, and he's in it for a little bit. He talks about him because he knew him in those days. And they actually put him in the movie. You know, her daughter sued the producers because it starts with her ma committing suicide. It was called Endless Waltz. So, because this is the guy who goes way back, right? And I know the Boris Katz collaborated with him. And you know, it's funny, Atsuo told me, yeah, he likes Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah?
So do you have a dichotomy like that where you like harsh experimental music, but then you like some, I don't know,
Stevens
and James Taylor or something like that?
I love, KPM, like the collab, tons of soundtrack music. I love, Italian soundtrack music and 60s garage and, psychedelic stuff and, things like, oh, God, what are, what's that amazing couple from, the 50s? I can't remember. But, stuff like the Tornadoes. I like really old, kind of easy listening stuff, Roy Orbison, and a lot of,
you, is music just music? You're not concerned with genre?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, great. I wish we could move past that shit. I really do.
Yeah.
It's such a fucking Berlin Wall. You could just take a fucking sledgehammer to it. Yeah, and it took me many years. Actually the movement, being part of the movement, finally, hey, fuck it. Music is music, and let everything be free. We're at the end of the second hour. May 11, 2021, edition Watt Peters, your special guest, Victoria Shen. Hold tight for hour three. May 11, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt Peters Show.
No. Oh, citywide man.
On the way.
Man.
Downtown.
Man.
Pirate cabs.
Downtown.
Pirate cabs.
Downtown.
Man.
10 minutes.
On the way.
10 minutes.
Man.
Downtown.
Man.
Getting close now, man. You're getting close.
Taking his right, old man.
Get rid of us quick, man. You're doing the pressure.
Yeah, taking his right.
Fucked up, man. I'm sorry.
From Pedro, shall we start off the third hour with Buchlockenspiel, an excerpt from Stockholm, Sweden? I guess you did a gig, right?
Yeah, a little residency there with like one of the world's oldest and most interesting synthesizers.
Wow. Okay, Victoria Shen. Are you were aware of a lady with electronic music named Darby?
Delia Derbyshire?
Yeah, Delia Derbyshire.
Oh, gosh, she's awesome. She's so good. I think it was just her birthday recently, too.
But she hates, the Sisters with Transistors, right? There's a new
knock
on this. But she actually quit electronic music because of synthesizers. She thought that was not the way. She was a total tape lady.
Yeah, I know. It's really interesting how there's this kind of division. There's a schism between tape music, like music concrete people, and then people who are about pure electronic music.
Right.
But Daphne Orme, who is kind of
she ended up inventing a synthesizer.
Yeah, exactly. The Oramics, right?
Right, and they're out of the BBC Sound Workshop. And there were some guys too, but these incredible pioneers in this stuff. And I've been learning from guests I've had on the show. Manuel Armida with Jiffy Cabs after that. And then another collab you did, Victoria Shen and Beam Splitter Remote collaboration called Hydra.
Yeah, they're in Germany. So Henrik, I believe, plays trombone, and then Audrey Chen, she's a vocalist, like a really pretty crazy vocalist. So they sent me a track, and then I did a thing, and then sent it back to them. So that was one of the
pandemic
output. Yeah.
Remote collaboration means trading files.
Exactly.
I've done in the last year and a half, I've done buttloads of records with cats I even met. So the internet's not all bad. I mean, you can spread bullshit and lies, but you can also trade files and collab.
Yeah, that's a more productive thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing, people. Like most things human, there's the duality involved. It can be really fucking lame, or it can be happening.
Yeah, use your powers for good or evil, right?
Right, right. Yeah. So you've made a lot of connects with experimental world. Yeah.
I think so. Part of the fact that, you know, it's a small niche world is that there's really strong, deep enclaves, like, everywhere in the world, right? And so it's kind of small networks. Everyone sort of knows everyone else. And it's really great. Can you imagine just, like, being, like, playing punk music right now and then, like, I don't know. It's just such a huge kind of world that it's, like, I feel like it'd be very difficult to, like, navigate things, like, say, like, internationally. But maybe I'm wrong. It's just my feeling that as part of – by virtue of being part of, like, a smaller pond, you have access – greater access, more far-flung influence, and also, you know, more access to everyone who's kind of got similar interests because it's so niche.
Yeah, one of the first punk bands was Throbbing Gristle, and they definitely were experimental electronic.
Mm-hmm.
Punk was not a style. It was more of a state of mind.
Yeah, but nowadays...
That's my experience. But then, yeah, it kind of turned into what? Fast guitar, young kids playing fast guitar. But actually, it was whatever let the freak flag fucking fly.
Yeah, initially, right?
Like all good things, right? They get corrupted. So, I'm a little curious. You said no pewters, but you use pewters to record.
Yeah. I think this is the thing. Like, I think my practice, first and foremost, needs to be experienced live, with live sound, with other people in the room. So pandemic has been kind of weird to be in the middle of. But I think that, you know, even if you perform live and, like, that's the meat and potatoes of your practice, you still have a document of it, right? Like, you'll record it. And I think if, you know, even though the recording is not the crux of your practice, it is still important to have, and it still can be enjoyed, right? So I think, like, you know, when I put together an album, it's not all just live stuff, like one take. It's recorded and then arranged and, like, you know, like, EQ'd and all this stuff. But I still feel like it's kind of secondary or even tertiary to the aim of, like, my practice. But it still needs to happen. You know, documentation still needs to happen.
Absolute, absolute. I'm glad. They're kind of a headstone. Because the kids go into the air, right? Look, I fucked up the chronology of your music journey. So I'm going to play Trim now.
Okay.
At the end of the show, I'm going to play the shit that was actually first.
Thank you. What happens when superheroes get high,
as long as you promise that you will never reveal my identity to anyone.
You're insane. I can't believe I let you ice all over my face.
Thank you.
For Pedro Show Last Music for this edition. Start out with Trim, Victoria's first band, and something called Blister Pack. Not Pat, it's more pun rock, people. There's a T at the end, not a K. So, yeah. You figure out your own connects. Yeah, right. Then Sean Lennon with The Dance, Part 1. I think he was making a soundtrack to a movie with this stuff. Yeah, he flowed me this stuff, but I think it was used for a movie. And then finally, Tatsuya Nakatani, Victoria Shen, Forbes Graham, Jim Hobbs, something live at Cambridge 2019, maybe right before this situation.
Definitely.
And in Cambridge, so you were back in, and we're not talking England, Cambridge.
We're talking Massachusetts.
Yeah, the part of Boston. T.T. the Bears, I played many times when it was open there.
Right. Rest in peace.
Yeah, the Charles River. The next Middle East, right? You said you're recording albums. You got one in the making right now?
No, I don't. I moved back to San Francisco, and I haven't really gotten a recording set up, like area set up yet, but I'm working on it. I just moved into my own place like a month ago, so it's in the works.
And you're actually in the city? You're not in the East Bay?
No, yeah, I'm in the city, like right on Market.
Like hardly anybody moves there anymore.
I know, everyone's moving out, which is why I could move in.
Okay, they made room for you. You don't have to dodge the Google bus, right?
Oh, fucking Google bus.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that. That's a fucking lame-ass tangent. But, okay, where can people find you on the Internet? Is there a Victoria Shen website?
Yeah, so there's a eviction.com. eviction.com, and you can also find me on Instagram, just search at eviction, same spelling, and like I do a lot of, like I post whatever electronic experiments that I'm working on in my stories, and also random animals.
From your own website, we can get to all them places, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And so you got to set up a place. So your recording situation ain't as portable as your live thing.
No, my recording situation was in storage for like 6 months.
Oh, okay, okay.
But so, I'm unpacking.
Okay, so you got plans. Are you inspired to? You got an album envisioned in your mind?
Kind of. I more so have, like, instruments in mind. Like, right now, I did a project where I was doing manicures, recreating, like, abstract expressionist paintings on people's nails, but I'm going full circle, and right now I'm trying to make these needle nails where I put record cartridges, record needles on artificial nails so that you can start playing records.
You know, that's trippy. Can I ask you something that might sound insane?
Yeah, please.
In Pedro here, we got like four nail shop, and it's all Vietnam ladies. Is there...
Mm-hmm.
What it couldn't be like they tell their friends, right? Why would it be so specific?
Oh, it totally has to do with like happenstance within a certain community, like say Cambodians, right?
Yeah.
Have the independent donut shop market cornered the same way Vietnamese ladies have nail shops cornered. It's kind of thing where once they immigrated to the US, they found a niche. And then they borrowed money, they had a successful business, and then they also, like, lend to their friends, you know, and, like, they have, like, a working business model, and then they could pass on that information, okay. That knowledge on. So it's just this kind of, like, emergent behavior that happens within immigrant communities.
Yeah. Like with the slap guys that got into fishing and the Italians from Ischia here. Mm-hmm. Long Beach has a boat people community of Cambodia.
Oh, yeah? That's cool.
And the writing reminds me of Sanskrit.
Oh, yeah, totally.
A little bit, right?
You ever see, like, a Burmese? Burmese writing is a trip.
Yeah, ain't that true? Okay, so you're thinking about nails. I'm sorry to bring that up on a tangent.
No, it's fucking weird because, like, you know, I'm really into, I don't know what you'd say, like, pure science, like, not pure math so much, but, like, you know, just this idea of, like, what is a speaker? Like, I don't know if you know, but, like, I released an LP last year and... The album art is made of copper, so it turns the jacket into a speaker, so you can listen to the record through the record jacket. So, like, stuff like this, like, sort of, like, pure, like, what is the purest form of a speaker or a microphone, whatever, right? But then I, like, will impress it into, like, a wearable, kind of, like, human scale sort of thing. Like, I'll make, what did I make? I make, like, earrings that are, like, decibel meters. So it's like they'll light up according to like how loud your environment is, and it's kind of cool because you can see in stereo how loud your environment
Look,
is.
I can't wait to hear your next record. When you get it done, can you come back on the show and we can play it?
Oh my God. It would be my pleasure. Yeah, this has been really fun.
Okay, thanks so much, Victoria. People, it's been the May 11, 2021 edition of the Waffle Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.